Conference record has joined the conference. The leader has unmuted your line. The leader has muted your line. To unmute your line, press #6.
All right, we're back.
We are back, and thank you for returning here. As discussed earlier, we'll go to 2 o'clock and stick with our schedule. And that will also, if I'm not mistaken, Judy, be the schedule for the August and September meeting as well, 10 to 2. So what we'd like to do for members of the committee at this time is we have a rather strange email to have you send comments into. I can't even I will read it, but if you all can pull out your pens and a piece of paper. If you'd like to send in comments, if you're listening in on the telephone as well, we encourage the public to send in comments on ways to streamline the Medicaid program, administrative functions of the Medicaid program, and any comments on the state and local relations as well can be sent to T-R-O-G-S T-R-M L-N G-E-G C-M-M-N-T-S. I'll do that again.
It should also be on the, there's a, on the MRT, on the Health Department website, the MRT button, this subcommittee has a page, and it should, that should be on the page.
We have indeed been punished.
Well, that's what was happening, though.
That's only half of it, yeah. You ready? Let's go over that again. P-R-O-G-S-T-R-M-L-N-G-E-G-C-M-M-N-T-S. At health.state.ny.us. So it looks like program streamline
comments
something
without any vowels.
Comments. At Health State New York, US. Okay. So we handed out, for those of you in the room, our friend from New York City outlining some of the legal issues surrounding the administrative takeover, a very constructive and helpful memorandum. Robert, we appreciate that. We will all take this back, take a look at it, and use it as a guiding, some guiding light as we go forward. So we had this time for a discussion. I jotted down a number of things, and we'll ask Judy and Ann and I to capture these thoughts and circulate them to you post this meeting to confirm that this is some of the things that we've identified and want this committee to take a look at for our next meeting. I'll just click off a few here, Ann, and then if you have others or anybody else, we can take them up at that time. So one of the first things we talked about here was sort of the innovator grant for and sort of an outreach to the 11 counties regarding the recertification by Maximus. And look for feedback. I think we should look for feedback from consumers as an important part of seeing how the system is working. Feedback from consumers, feedback by the Department of Health, and feedback by the county districts. Someone mentioned, I'm not sure who, about the what did this mean to the districts? Did it free up time? How were they able to reallocate staff? And what were they planning to do? I think that is constructive and helpful. The second bullet here that I jotted down was the MAGI regs by CMS. The impact in New York, we're going to have to wait and look through this extensive regulation coming from the federal government. And I believe it was Joe said, what remains for New York to do? Was there a waiver application, recommendation that's needed by this group to the state? The impact of the for those of you who don't know what MAGI stands for, I believe it stands for Modified Adjusted Gross Income. And for the impact of non-MAGI work, the impact of the non-MAGI folks, and will the MAGI regulations cover non-MAGI population? So keeping an eye on that issue on our radar. I had a note here about the application process itself. I'm not sure if we can fold that into the health insurance exchange and use that as a general header of the health insurance exchange and the impact of local districts and the health insurance exchange. I had a note here on fraud, waste, and abuse, front-end detection, making sure that continues to be part of the conversation to go forward, to preserve the local or the integrity of the Medicaid program through local district participation with the Office of the Medicaid Inspector General. I had a note here on third-party liability recommendations from this group to make sure that for estate recoveries or sort of the paperwork documentation that locals, that function was recently taken over by the state, that the locals can continue to participate in that process and work with the state on that. I took a note on a checklist of issues by Robert, suggested that perhaps we look at or ask the state for a checklist of issues by local districts, the state assumption of local administration of Medicaid, if there was a way that we could click off concerns from the districts, from the state to evaluate as they try to do this. There was a note here on the integration of Health and Human Services and the or not integrating the two systems, and to identify what are we talking about with the implementation of the health insurance exchange and health insurance and the impact to human services. And there may be a desire for stronger protocols for eligibility verification on human services as opposed to a public health program. There was a note to ensure a recommendation on training funds or implementing the new federal law. A note here on the concern about mandatory managed care and the reduced role for counties in service authorization. And finally, the last note that I had, Ann, was liability issues regarding a transfer of administrative functions, by administrative functions, and that liability issues need to be looked at, improving levels of accountability amongst the governments. So at least we can articulate a to-do list from this meeting here, which was in itself is a lot of work to produce some of these reports, but I think it gives us a good place to at least start the dialogue for the next meeting.
Steve, could I ask something?
Please, by all means. We'll turn it over now to the committee to add things.
We probably don't want to make it too much longer, but I think we started out with a little discussion that we were concerned about potential overlap between this group and the managed long-term care group.
Right.
We felt like we needed a little bit of a better definition there.
Yeah, let me comment on that. I think the way we'd like to propose handling that is that they're meeting tomorrow. Judith will alert the folks who are going to be there to watch for this discussion. And depending upon the way the discussion takes, if it looks like it's doable within our work, you know, there's work still to be done, that we might ask for a subcommittee on that because it's very technical and very different than some of the other big work. And anyone who would want to be on that subcommittee could do that to take that piece of work. But that's open for your approval as well. We just think that it's really hard to use all our time in the meetings to accomplish all of that big work. So does that seem like a way to go? Martha, is that okay with
yeah.
you? Okay. Fine, go ahead.
Thank you. So your list, Steve, the sort of things we want to make sure we attend to, is the kind of issues that we want to address?
Yes, these are issues that sort of came up from the conversation today. So more information is needed on these particular things that I listed.
I think a good place to start would be for everybody to, our homework, to read the NISAC report and the DOH report.
Why don't we distribute those? Oh, they are online by link, so we can all read those reports.
No,
that's good.
Right.
Links, we should read them for the next meeting.
Right, and then see what, because I don't know that NISAC has even sort of taken the department's report, maybe data, and really looked at how it compared to what NISAC was proposing, et cetera. And I also would like us to be sure that we address financing in some way, craft a statement that talks about how, in some ways, financing should be independent of administration, but in other ways, it's integrally related. and certainly to make, as I said before, make a recommendation that program financing be taken over by the state.
That makes good sense, and we'll include
Are there other readings that people would like that think might be useful? Yeah, that's the new United Hospital Fund report. Can you? Yeah.
2009 United Hospital Fund report, the role of local government in delivering Medicaid.
So that's the third. We should triangulate those three in terms of what recommendations are in all three. Might be a good place for us to start. I also would like, if anybody has information on other states and what's been done, Melinda, I don't know if you can get that through your work or Judy or through the, what is it called, the State Association of Health Departments or whatever.
HMA study, maybe 2007 for the United Hospital Fund, where they looked at six states.
I think, yeah, and I think it's cited in one or more of these other reports. So
maybe you could send the link out to folks.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. The more information we have, the more commonalities we find in these reports gives us a basis on which to really do our work.
Fran?
I think one of the issues that we need to explore and we need to talk about at length are the workforce issues if there is in the state takeover of admin services, because pursuant to the legislation, you have to recognize collective bargaining. That's over 50 contracts with different terms and conditions of collective bargaining, as well as these workers are trained and have been doing it for years. So are these workers ones that we want to transition? I mean, that would make the most sense because they're educated. Do they move out of their workplace? Do they stay right there? If they're staying right there, what is the financial impetus to change their title from a state worker to a local government worker? And all of these issues need to be resolved and need to be talked about, because in some states that have proposed a state takeover, it's gotten so far and then it's halted because they could never get over the workforce issues. So I think something we needed to explore.
That's in the whole section on that in the NYSAC report.
Questions, comments, concerns, other?
Trilby?
Yeah, a couple things that I think came up this morning that I don't think I heard, Steve, in your list.
Mm-hmm.
One was, and this is at the risk of slightly broadening what we want to be focusing on with the exchange. You mentioned the Magi, and that's certainly going to be very important for us to understand the eligibility first, the Magi group. But I think we also talked about the importance of sort of crosswalking that with what the eligibility requirements or the processing will be like for the non-Magi, because there may be some room for us to recommend some streamlining for that group, or at least, as Joe was saying, talk about how we're going to do that, when we're going to do that, what's our plan for getting to that group with simplification as well. And I think, you know, when you look at, from Judy's slide, some of the bullets about what all the exchange will be doing, the functions of the exchange, there's a few more things that I think we might want to concern ourselves with. Some of these functions where you are determining eligibility for subsidies, for example, because in order to determine eligibility for the subsidy, you have to first determine eligibility for Medicaid, we're going to need to be cognizant of what that premium subsidy eligibility determination looks like. And the best way to screen people for that, to sort of truncate the Medicaid screening so that people are getting into some form of coverage as quickly as possible. So I think we're going to have to look a little bit at the broader eligibility questions. I hope that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also concerned that we make sure that people get the information they need to decide whether or not to go through a briefer screening for Medicaid, maybe ending up in the subsidy bucket, when if they went through a more lengthy Medicaid screening, they might end up qualifying. So there's going to be some very tricky, how do we get information out to folks? How do we make sure they're aware of all the possible benefits they could qualify for? And I don't know if that's going to end up, you know, whose function that's going to end up being and how we're going to ensure that we get these addressed to people in a way that's really accessible and they can really make good decisions. It's a big challenge. One other thing that came up this morning, and that was there might be some fully formed proposals out there for streamlining that we might want to make a recommendation on. And there also might be some fully formed proposals out there that we see as harmful to simplification or streamlining that we may want to weigh in on. I'm aware of one of those that has passed both the House and the Senate. It's passed the Senate and may come up under consideration in the House, and that's for the biometric palm screening. You know, these types of proposals that are getting some support, we may want to decide whether or not they're consistent with what we're recommending. Yes, this is a state bill. Did I just say that backwards? Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, this was a state bill. Sorry. It passed in the Senate and has not passed in the Assembly yet.
Rob?
One of the things I thought Joe said earlier that was very good was that the real driving force in a lot of this is the federal reform bill, and that is setting the stage for the exchanges and a lot of what we're doing. I think it would be helpful to this group if Judy or State DOH could monitor whatever is taking place in Washington now that might affect the future of these plans. The president is discussing big changes to large entitlement programs, one of which is Medicaid. And I just think that we're kind of building something, assuming the world remains the way it is from the federal perspective, and it might not. And I just want to have a little sense of what could go wrong. We build it all for this, and then it doesn't happen.
I would second that, or maybe third, because I made that point originally. But I think as well, I mean, like when I was hearing about the 90-10 Judy match, and of course now they're talking about a blended rate for all states. So, you know, what's that blended rate mean? And, you know, I think it goes back to, I think, Anne, what you were saying earlier. It's like, whoa, you know, how many layers can we deal with and how many? And, I mean, I know Judy, unfortunately, is in the, you know, hot seat because you've got to deal with all these layers because the state has to do something and move ahead. So with that, I mean, I think we all understand that. But I think it's a very dynamic situation, as you're saying. And, you know, we need to have kind of real-time information if we're really going to get something done in October. Or we need to be able to build something or, you know, construct a plan using these other plans, you know, not a whole cloth, because I think we're going to have to plagiarize a lot, that is flexible enough, you know, and that doesn't, you know, go down just because one thing happens on the federal level in next year, you know, because this is a multi-year process. And I think that's something that we need to, I think, to be aware of, the flexibility or the adaptability of anything that we come up with, you know, that there has to be some guiding principles in addition to maybe being some, you know, I know we need to get down in the weeds on some of this stuff, but, you know, it needs to be connected to a larger, you know, guiding principle, perhaps, so that we don't, if something falls apart somewhere along the line, the whole work doesn't go down the tubes, as it were.
Melinda?
There was another issue that we didn't want to do these slides, but we didn't really talk about. Part of the eligibility process that counties play some role in, but this is on the takeover list, some places have that they play less of a role, is the selection of a managed care plan. And that's an area that the exchange could significantly change the environment to. And so I thought maybe we should flag that also on our list. I think it sits in the eligibility bucket. I don't think it's its own new set. I'm not saying we're going to take up a whole new agenda around managed care, but I think there are eligibility functions right now related to managed care selection, and there are specific mandates for the exchange to do certain functions in that regard. We should be talking about what the implications are for streamlining the Medicaid system.
I was just going to add, it seems to me that we could learn a lot from doing almost I don't know what to call it, a case study or a real life. The exchange is going to do certain things that's going to affect local districts, right? And that's kind of a real-time example that I'm sure will bump us up against workforce issues, financing issues, all of those things. And it might be that that's something that we know at least enough about with the Maggie rules, to
play out at our next meeting about, you know, today they're taking it over. What does that mean? What's the implication locally? What's the implication on all those things that now will become exchange responsibilities? Sometimes it's easier to think about those things in a real situation than in the abstract. So maybe we could try that next time, too. People think, what do you think of that? To use it as a real thing.
Yeah,
Martha.
It seems like we really need to know more about the exchange and whether it's maybe get to read the, can we read the early innovator grant proposal? Would that be useful to see what the state has put out there?
It might be better to read the exchange legislation.
Yeah,
okay.
Or to a summary of that, too.
Having read the early innovator grants, I don't recommend
it.
Right.
The exchange legislation is not too long.
Right.
And it's not easy to understand, but it's and some kind of summary of that would be helpful.
Summary of the exchange legislation?
Mm-hmm. By the way, do we have any sense that there's going to be any pushback from the Senate? You said the Senate hasn't passed it.
I think they'll pass it.
We reached a three-way agreement at 5 o'clock in the morning one night, expected it to be passed in 2 hours, and then it wasn't. So we still think we have a three-way agreement.
But the truth is, even if they don't pass the bill, planning is going to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, states can draw down, not as much, but they can draw down.
We submitted a level one establishment grant for another $10 million just last week.
And many states have not passed their exchange establishment legislation and never move forward with planning efforts.
And I think the important thing is to look at the slide that Judy, you know, gave us about what the responsibilities of the exchange are, and there are references to the federal law there, and basically that is what we have. That's what the exchange has to do under federal law. So the exchange establishment legislation for New York, I think it's important to know it. I'm not saying we don't need to know about it or read it. But it basically is going to parent with regard to the responsibilities of the exchange. Now there are other things about whether it should be it's an authority, a public authority for the cities, et cetera, versus the structure. But I don't think that's within our purview here necessarily, although that would have impact perhaps upon workforce issues or local state relationships. So I'm not saying, but with vis-a-vis eligibility determinations and enrollment, the Fed say this is what the exchange is going to do. Guess what? That's what the exchange has to do. So I think, once again, there's a couple buckets that we need to look at and that the exchange is important for, but the buckets really are in our charge, from the get-go. And so I think the exchange is the larger context, and the requirements of the exchange and of the federal law vis-a-vis, what the exchange needs to do are important. And when we get the MAGI rules, we'll know how simplified we are or not simplified, and also whether we have a charge or we have a responsibility as a state to make them even more simplified, because the state has a certain level of leeway there, either in the regs themselves or through waiver, capability. And then secondly, as to beat that drum, for the non-magis, how are we going to streamline and simplify them? And then, of course, you could then move over to, okay, is it done locally? Is it done centrally? Is it done in some hybrid system? Or is there some incremental, pathway to get to one or the other?
I'm thinking it might be useful for us to take a quick look at this part of Judy's slides, and just see if there are functions that we feel should be within our charge. And this starts on page 4 of the second set of slides that she took us through. And I think the one, state and local responsibility set. And I think Judy highlighted for us the function that shows up on page 5, the third bullet down, inform individuals of eligibility requirements for Medicaid CHIP, blah, 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 determine eligibility and enroll individuals if eligible. So that one is squarely, ours. But I'm wondering if folks see others that also would be relevant. I mean, I circled several of these, some of them being relevant to the managed care. How do you choose a plan? How do you understand what your options are?
What about the navigator discussion?
Navigator.
That comes up everywhere I go.
Yeah.
It might be worth tackle it. I mean, I like Anne's idea of sort of taking the exchange, what we have to do, and then where are the decision points for New York, and where are we on some of these issues around,
as well as what are some of the implications of this on workforce,
mm-hmm.
on consumer information, on a variety of things.
The requirements of what the exchange must provide is pretty clear, and you said it also has to provide it in all four mediums. So is it envisioned that there will be an exchange office or multiple exchange offices in New York City staffed by state employees?
No one has made that decision yet, but I don't know.
But how long
was there? Should we recommend a recommendation?
Yeah, well, I guess, but I just want to get, what are the options, though? How do you do it if you don't do that?
Well, there are lots of options. You can contract with local districts. You can contract with a statewide vendor. You can contract with multiple. I mean, there are lots of different options.
Contract with CBOs.
Okay.
All right. You can let brokers do it. Believe me, they come in.
Grant, did you have something?
But when it comes to Medicaid eligibility, and the state exchange recognized that, or the governor and the legislature recognized it in writing the state exchange language, it can only be done by public employees and civil service. And, in fact, that is exactly how they wrote the language of the state exchange. So contracting with a provider, a statewide or not-for-profit, is not going to necessarily meet those requirements.
Is that right?
I don't believe that. Going to be true in the federal regs, but we can wait and see on that.
But the state exchange language is written that way.
We didn't.
The freeway agreement
didn't
have that.
No.
I thought it did.
It's in the legislation.
Well, let's get a copy.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it has the exchange staff need to be civil service employees. So
right.
Portion of them. That's different from the eligibility determination.
But we thought the federal government requires a government official to certify eligibility.
For Medicaid.
Right now.
See, it's such a changing world.
You expect that to change.
Everything's changing so quickly. Okay,
I think we're waiting. I don't know the answer to that. We're just waiting to see.
I think one of the issues is what does it mean to certify eligibility?
Right.
And that doesn't have to mean, like, we have facilitated enrollment right now.
Yeah, that's exactly that world.
And so I think if you go to an automated system, the question of what it means to certify
I can answer part of your question definitively from CMS. The state has to own the rules for Medicaid. So even the exchange can't own our rules. But the exchange can effectuate our rules. But we own our rules.
What do you mean own our rules?
Meaning we develop the rules. If we create a system, we program the rules. The exchange cannot set policy for Medicaid. The state Medicaid agency has to own the setting of policy for Medicaid.
Does the federal system have to sort of okay the state's rules?
No more than they do today through SPAs and waiver approvals and
generally.
Melinda?
Looking at the clock. I maybe other people understand this, but what's our deliverable at the end? Are we doing a report? Are we doing I'm just trying to figure out what our where we're gonna end up and what we're expecting to go in that, and do we have maybe one of the things for next time is we should ask you to help us put together a work plan, working towards that, so we have some milestones along the way, because we have such a long list.
Mm-hmm.
So
we will distill down what we talked about here with the department,
mm-hmm.
and try to do that.
And Jason has promised some guidance on that, so in the next week or two, I'm supposed to know what we're supposed to produce at the end, and I will get that out as soon as I know.
The draft
going to give us templates.
Yeah. Deadline is obviously for the November budget submittal, any changes that we would propose. So whether that's in a formal written report with a lot of text or whether it's a list of things is unclear, but it is concrete recommendations, just like we had out of the MRT.
As a process thing, the NYSEC Commission, we broke into subcommittees that also had conference calls, and there might be by the end of the next meeting, we might have more clear kind of little groups who can do those more specific things. And because we've kind of
broadens our whole study here. But I think we should make sure we should really remember this is an amazing opportunity. It's not just, you know, this is, we're like throwing everything up in the air, and actually there are some new resources here that we never would have had. And, so it's a good time to do this. I wanted to, we talked a lot about the system, about the software, the welfare management system, and how that gets built, and the input, you know, what kind of testing, what kind of feedback from users, both clients and local caseworkers. I hope we make sure to, I mean, that'll be so key to how all this works or doesn't work. I hope we can in some way put some more attention to that later on too.
I have a question. I mean, I know Maggie, I think she's left us, but she's brought up a couple times fraud and abuse, waste, fraud and abuse. And I think I would like some further information, you know, on, you know, kind of those issues and, you know, what, and maybe it's in the NYSAC report. You know, I did skim that. I haven't read it in full, but I will now. It's required reading. I think I'm curious about it from the get-go, particularly with regard to beneficiary or recipient, you know, fraud. You know, I know, and I think there's general consensus in the law enforcement community that the big bucks, you know, in waste and fraud and abuse are really in the provider side and, you know, criminal elements as well, you know. And I would say, you know, criminal elements, you know, particularly in the Medicare program, you know, as recent cases have demonstrated. But I guess I'd like to get, you know, a lot of states have done a lot of the simplification that we've done or that we're talking about doing. And, I mean, if there's any experience out there on whether or not there has been a kind of diminution of program integrity, I think that would be useful to know. And also, you know, given the fact that a lot of the simplification that's going to be occurring is going to be federally required, as it were, you know, what protections have the feds, if any, you know, put in to, you know, that we can either, that we'll have the benefit of, or that we can mirror in some way if they don't apply, you know, to a particular population. So, you know, I think it's easy, and I'm not being critical, it's easy to say we're concerned about it, but I frankly don't have enough on the beneficiary side as opposed to the provider side of good understanding of, like, what it means and what the volume of it or what the scope of it is. So,
right. Well, would local districts be responsible for this new class under the exchange health insurance program?
Who's
policing the integrity of that program? It's not our jurisdiction. We have recipient fraud jurisdiction now. That's it.
Right.
We do not have provider fraud. Only in a few counties do we have that.
Right.
So, good question.
Robert, were you going to answer this?
Well, we may have the responsibility for it, but we don't have the resources to do it and sort of the tools to apply it. And the concern is that the rules are such that it's very hard to catch anything at the front door, and you're always sort of catching it back door. I have a district attorney in Brooklyn who feels that he could do a Medicaid fraud case against a Medicaid recipient any day of the week, and it's a problem because that embarrasses our program every time he does it.
Struggling with what I understand what you're looking for on the exchange, but what you're looking for, are you looking for what counties do today, what data we have, like our firm results, our last firm results? I'm trying to get this to be more concrete.
Yeah, no, and I'm sorry if I'm not being...
Well, you know, perhaps this is a place where Steve's association can help and kind of poll around,
we can get,
you know, a level of... And I think it is important to distinguish between enrollee fraud versus, or recipient fraud versus provider fraud, because sometimes the comment can really spread both ways, and it isn't as accurate on one side.
And I guess, you know, I come at this, you know, from a you know, from a beneficiary, from a consumer standpoint. And I guess, you know, my feeling is there's always going to be a certain level of fraud and abuse and waste. You know, we're never going to get, I'm not saying we shouldn't make every effort to get as much as we possibly can, but, you know, there's a lot of things that are illegal in this country that happen every day. You know what I mean? Even though there are laws against it. So you're never going to get it all, right? And so I'm worried about that tension between streamlining and waste or fraud or abuse. And that, you know, that tension is always being mediated. You know, I mean, once you stop asking for certain documents, once you stop looking at certain things, you open up the door a little bit wider. You know, but you open up to a lot of door to a lot of people that are, you know, that are really eligible, but couldn't produce that document or didn't have that document, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, I think we need to, you know, I've heard the fraud, waste, and abuse thing mentioned. I think we need to have a better sense of what the balance is, or what what the protections already are, and are they enough, or are they too little in the context of any new, eligibility screen coming down the pipe. That said, I also feel like the responsibility is somewhat devolving, you know, up to the federal government to a great degree, given the fact that, you know, okay, here's the new MAGI rules, here's the new, you know, we're. In a sense, they're nationalizing.
Federal verification.
Right. So they're nationalizing Medicaid in some way. You know, there's this nationalization, if you will. Texas and New York will be closer than ever before. You know, that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. But is that really a discussion we need to have? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's kind of the question. Is the fraud and abuse thing really a discussion for us, because it's kind of like off the table now because the feds have said this is what you've got to do, you know, program integrity, we've got it under control or we're helping out. I don't know. I haven't focused on the program integrity side.
Well, I'm pretty sure that all my audits aren't going away.
But those are usually towards providers.
Okay, and actually, when I think of, as you were talking, Joe, I don't know if I'm understanding this correctly, but it seems to me the streamlining of eligibility, if that opens us up to abuse, that's on the enrollee side.
Right, that's true.
It doesn't have anything to do, does it, with providers?
That's the point.
So and providers are where the bucks are, and actually the sort of really kind of bad stuff. I mean, if an enrollee is stealing something from the taxpayer, it's health care. I mean, they're getting to go to the doctor, maybe, and they shouldn't be getting that on the taxpayer's dime. And I mean, that's kind of what the so
right.
Okay, but I think mm-hmm. certainly the dollars that are involved are never going to be.
Should we deal with it at all?
Right.
You know, because
right.
it was raised as a piece of our work here. Should we deal with it at all, or should we just not kind of worry about that? And if we decide not to worry about it, it's because of the new MAGI rules and the new federal rules coming down. It's like not our responsibility.
I would say let's not worry about it.
Yeah.
So, and also on the debate here about whether to return the face-to-face interview, I mean, that's no longer required under the ACA. So
right.
those debates we were having are no
right.
longer relevant.
Right.
Right.
Okay, let's move on. Any closing comments, questions, concerns?
There is one outstanding question that was put on the table about whether the committee wanted to weigh in on the importance of the exchange and take a position on that. And I just didn't want to let that hang there, Kate, without us, you know, in some ways it's not related to our work, but in other ways, it's important that the state adopt that, or we'll be even further behind because then the feds will have an exchange, and who knows where that's going to be. So I just don't know the appropriateness of it, and I want to make sure we close that out for Kate. Were you asking that the committee weigh in on that?
Well, I think, you know, in the interest of being thoughtful and planful, I mean, that's what we're doing now, and that's really what I heard Judy talking about when she was saying, you know, the stuff that we're talking about that we're all excited about has taken 4 years to implement. So, yeah, that's, I mean, I kind of thought, wow, it seems as though the people in this room should have an interest, I would imagine, in seeing the state take the simple step forward in establishing the exchange, especially considering there's already a three-way agreement on it. So I don't know what I don't know what our appropriate role is either, but it seems to me that it does fit. You know, it's one of the steps that has to happen, you know, as we march along and gets us closer.
I don't know if our committee's within the charge of, you know, adopting that. I think as individuals and representing organizations, we certainly can weigh in. I'm just not sure whether that's within our scope.
Well, I'm wondering if we could simply report back that there was discussion of, you know, the need to move forward on this. And there was concern among the committee that if we don't move forward, we'll get even further behind other states and be in a less ideal position to get federal funding. And we could do a little straw vote, I mean, not straw vote, but a quick vote now to see if it's unanimous. Because if that comes back as unanimous, then that seems to be something worth communicating up to the to our conveners.
The first item on our charge is this workgroup will identify the administrative impediments that prevent New York residents from accessing the health care services they need. I would say failure to pass the exchange will be significant. Very significant impediment to New Yorkers getting the health care services they need.
Does anyone see it differently? Okay, so by consensus, then, I would say we'll figure out a way to make that message clear, and but I don't think we need to take a vote,
okay,
but
sure.
We'll see how to make that message clear. Okay.
Thanks.
Other questions, comments, concerns? About what we're doing, this changing world.
Can I add one more?
Sure.
Not to be negative, I don't mean that. I just think, you know, we have so much to do, and it's really scary being at the end of this meeting and trying to figure that out. And I appreciate, Melinda, the work plan and really focusing. And so we will be doing as much of that as possible and communicating back with you before the next meeting about kind of work plans and what we have, so that we can really deliver something. I was at a session a couple weeks ago where they encouraged us to do something they called a pre-mortem rather than a post-mortem, and to ask at the beginning of a project, if in 6 months we've accomplished nothing, why would that have happened? And so I've been trying to think here, why, if we didn't come up with an answer, why would that be? And I think primarily it would be because we never could figure out how to get our arms around a doable body of work. At least for me, that would be a big piece of it. And so I think we really, from the chair's perspective, I think that's really one of our priorities, is to make it doable. So, yes.
I would just suggest to maybe ask the group if anyone's open to doing a couple of conference calls in between meetings. Trying to schedule these big statewide meetings are logistically difficult, but if we do break off into some smaller groups with specific tasks, perhaps there are a few things that we could try to tackle by phone and then perhaps report back to the bigger group at our big meeting.
We'll factor that in.
Thank you, Ann. Thank
else?
You, Ann, and everybody. Thank you, Ann, and everybody
for participating.
I thought it was a great discussion.
And let the record show we're leaving 4 minutes early. Thank you. We'll be in touch with all of you. Thanks for your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, did you raise your hand?
No, I didn't. I didn't raise my hand. But that's what you want to preserve a long time. Oh, you do?
Oh,
okay. So we're recognizing that.
Thank you, Martha. Good view from here, isn't it?
Oh,
I just want to get a card.
Thank you.
Thank you.
to talk about this.
talk about what we should have been doing in the next meeting and then how we get it done.
So I would take back to that question.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for doing that. I'm sorry, we did too. It's great to be able to actually move our recommendations forward.
There's one thing we've done.
Yeah.
We can't say we did
not. No, I was going to say, so I think we should think about our recommendations for our whole way around. Things in the budget and their things.
You're really going to have to have local